Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
Strange case. No sign of violence, yet she looks completely contorted in fear. Almost as if she'd been frightened to death. As if she'd seen something too horrible to live through.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 207, 2014's Creep.
And I creep around, around, around.
Radiohead.
I could have done the radio. I'm a creep.
That'd be too autobiographical.
Well, yeah. Well, I was going to say, I mean, is this TLC's Creep or is this Radiohead's Creep?
Oh, good call, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was singing originally, yeah. You know? TLC. Do you remember that song?
I do remember that song.
I think there's another song called Creep. There's at least three or four songs entitled
Maybe Stone Temple Pilots, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh,
yeah,
my
yeah.
God.
Too many creep songs.
Indeed.
Speaking of creeps, Chris, yeah. What do you think of Creep?
interesting how I came to this, because I was just looking for something to watch, as one does on Netflix, and all I did was read the premise.
See, what I do,
zero
what I
this.
Do is I look for things to watch on Netflix, and what I end up doing is I just spend about an hour going through each and every little thumbnail.
And saying, seen it?
No. Shit.
Oh.
Awful, terrible. I'm going to get rid of my Netflix subscription very soon.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, Netflix sucks. I can't ever find anything to watch. And I'm going on a rant. I'm going on a little bit of a rant here, and I'm going to go on a little tangent. But when I first subscribed to Netflix, I'd say about 3 years ago, it was amazing, okay? At least when I went over to American Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to horror, they had the complete Bava catalog. They had the complete Franco catalog, just Franco. They had tons of AIP stuff. Corman, Vincent Price films, etc. Now, when it comes to horror, with the exception of a few odd movies here and there, like Creep, it's all straight to video direct. And, you know, yeah, you get your Stranger Things, you get your Black Mirrors. I do enjoy that. But I did not subscribe to Netflix for original programming. And it's all original programming now.
Yeah, like
Netflix is shit. Okay? If you are listening to me now, Reed Hastings, is that the guy?
Oh, I forget. Yeah.
Whatever. You are operating a shit service. You're making tons of money, so you don't care what I say. You're getting great ratings for your god-awful Will Smith starring movies, Bright, or your stupid Cloverfield sequel that you decided
to direct to. Yeah,
ambush
us. Cloverfield Paradox?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Netflix is garbage. And for the horror fan, Netflix is a barren wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
Creep has been on there for
four years.
Yeah. And it's a good movie. Don't get me wrong. I really enjoy it. Creep 2 is on there now, too. Not as good as Creep. But anyway, I'm sorry. I interrupted you. I had to get off my chest. Because I'm every month I say, this is the last month I'm going to keep Netflix. I have other avenues to watch movies.
Yeah, I just discovered 2-bit TV. I think that's what it's called. So basically a streaming service.
Cody
as well, yeah. which plays ads, but it's on the up and up. And that was recommended on some podcast. I think the Down the Hallway podcast or Last House on the Left, something. Or Last Podcast on the Left. But speaking of garbage and dreck, I mean, we've made no bones about the fact we don't like found footage.
Exactly.
So when we found, pardon the pun, this movie on Netflix with the synopsis and Netflix's dismal track record of providing us with scant entertainment these last 2 years of just garbage, like, who would have thought the stars would align and a movie like this would be so fantastic? And this is the directorial debut of Patrick Bryce. Full-length feature.
Maybe I should have IMDb this. Did Bryce direct it, or did he just write it? Or was this directed by Mark Duplass?
I thought one of them starred, the other directed.
Well, they both were involved in it creatively. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I believe that Mark Duplass was the director and Bryce was the writer.
Oh, I'm not sure, but regardless...
I could be wrong.
They did not have any sort of background other than working like an indie film. I think he worked on Pig Hunt or some sort of weird
thing. That's the thing, too. I mean, when I first saw this movie, it was about 4 years ago, and I saw it on Netflix, and I hate found footage. Especially, I mean, anything more or less post-Cannibal Holocaust, with the exception of the odd ones here and there, I can't stand it. So when I watched this movie, and it was a found footage movie that I actually enjoyed, yes, there's flaws, but I actually enjoyed it, I was pleasantly surprised. Now, the thing about Mark Duplass is, I had always thought of him as this, like, hipster indie director. Because I remember many years back, I rented this film... back when I could rent movies, when we still had local video stores, called The Puffy Chair. And I believe that was also written and directed by Mr. Duplass.
Yeah.
I could be mistaken, but he is a writer, he is a director. Actually, it was directed by him. It was directed by both him and his brother Jay, the Duplass brothers. And I saw another insufferable hipster indie film called No Safety Guaranteed. I believe that was on Netflix as well. I think Aubrey Plaza was in that, Jake Johnson from New Girl, whatever. But I always thought of this Duplass guy, and he looked like a hipster in the puffy chair. Sure. You know, he had a beard about as big as mine now. I got a bit of a hipster beard going right now, if not Moses or Methuselah with all the grays. So I was, when I first saw Creep, one of the first things I was taken aback by was just his appearance and how uber nerdy he looked, you know, and how he acted. You know, I mean, this character took me aback. This character that he plays in the movie, Joseph. And I say Joseph in quotes because in Creep 2, he is also he's a serial killer. Mm-hmm. He makes no bones about it, but his name is Aaron.
Oh,
yes.
Nice.
He adopts the name of...
You spoiled the abysmal sequel, which you warned me to steer clear of, and I was going to dive right in, but I trust your judgment implicitly.
Some people on IMDb do like it, and they say it's even better than the original. I don't think so. I think that what happened with the original Creep was that the novelty was there, and then once that thrill is gone and you know what this guy is all about, it doesn't lend itself to any further stories. But it's worth a watch if there's nothing else on. And you know what? When it comes to Netflix, there really is nothing else on. So
yeah, and to their credit, I guess when you want to, or if you have to use the found footage conceit, at least put it in a format where it can be sort of explained away and not have someone constantly running around with a camera. So at least here it fits really well within the plot. And the plot, I gotta say, is pretty unique and pretty awesome because it draws us in and doesn't tip off, I guess, the behavior that you would get from the protagonist. So the setup is basically a guy who places an ad on Craigslist in order to document his final days because he's got some sort of terminal cancer. And I think, well, that's amazing. Like, what a great thing to see. So you're just watching this guy's heartfelt, soon-to-be posthumous dispatch to his young child saying, "This is, I'm the father you didn't know," kind
of
thing.
But the thing is, first of all, yes, that is what brings Aaron to
the filmmaker,
Joseph's house.
To Joseph, yeah.
Right, because he puts an ad in Craigslist to hire someone. Aaron doesn't even know what he's heading up there for. He's just going up, and Aaron is played by Patrick Bryce, one of the co-writers. Actually, I just found out today that a lot of this was improvised. They only just had a bare-bones script, and Duplass and Bryce just improvised the dialogue. And what I like about this film, it doesn't tip its hand too early or too much, because we meet this character, Joseph, and when we first see him, we're like, okay, there's something a little bit weird about this guy. Something a little bit off, but
he's dying, and then you expect. Okay,
well, that's
how
he says, right?
Yeah, but you trust his word from the beginning, and
but
just
you don't
say,
because like you trust his word for all of like 3 minutes until he just goes fucking apeshit and starts going to the tub for tubby time, and right away you're like, this guy's not all there, and then you go from I'm dying of cancer to tubby time when he's.
Tubby time was a little odd.
It's like red flag after red. I wrote down like 8 red flags should have tipped
time,
off Aaron to just get the fuck out of there. Describe tubby time.
Well, I mean, Joseph just drops his drawers in the middle of his bathroom. And this is in this sort of sprawling cottage in the middle of Northern California. And in this bathroom, it's like this guy is supposed to, his assignment is to film you talk, and then all of a sudden you're naked and taking like a kid's bath. So that was
and you're miming odd. Rubbing soap on your kid's bath, you're not even washing born his kid. Hair.
It's like, it's a little odd.
And then by the time we get to Pete Fuzz the werewolf, I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. I mean, any sane individual is going to say, cancer or no cancer, fuck you, I'm out of here. Yeah. You know, and why Aaron's stuck around when there was just one flag after another.
That flag, I thought the tubby time, at least he explained it away. He sort of tried to sort of stumble his way to an apology, and you were back on board.
So but that's not like, normal that's behavior. Weird. That's and, not no, normal it is not behavior. Normal you're behavior, trying to but... record mm-hmm. a message for your unborn child that's going to be watched posthumously. You don't get naked and go into a bathtub and pretend you're soaping him down and singing Rubber Ducky. It's not normal behavior.
Well, nothing. No, that I chalked it up to maybe the guy's dying. Maybe he's a weirdo, but
nothing that this Joseph character does from the very beginning. When, you know, he does like the jump scare. He likes the prank. Nothing he does is normal.
Well,
And it's just increasingly more bizarre behavior, more red flags. But this Aaron character, for some reason, keeps getting suckered in. And the more he starts to realize, okay, things aren't exactly how they should be. And yeah, of course, at first he's a little reticent and he's sympathetic because this guy concocts his bullshit cock and bull story.
Yeah, yeah.
That I'm dying of cancer. And he's like, okay, maybe he's a bit eccentric, whatever. That was a bit weird, but
yeah.
Then you get the Pete Fuzz, and then you get the disappearing in the woods, and then you get the, you know, let's go, let's have a whiskey, and we're best friends, and all that. Mm-hmm. It just starts to get more and more. But although Aaron is a complete moron for not just getting in his car and heading back home the minute the tubby time ended, okay, we accept the fact that Aaron's stupid, right? We accept the fact that Aaron should not have stuck around. But what I like about this is that it's like a tourniquet. The dread just keeps on building.
Yeah, yeah.
Aaron is in this situation. By the time he realizes the danger he's in, and by the time he tries to get out, it's too late. And I guess I'm going to semi-spoil things by saying he does get out. He does manage to leave this abode of Joseph's with his life intact. But that isn't the end of his relations with Joseph, because then Joseph starts stalking him.
Yeah, well, to his credit, like he may be, you know, maybe he's not a little bit of a naif, but he still drugs Joseph when he does find out and manages to render him comatose, so at least he can sort of bide some time.
See, then
he can just bail.
The thing is this, right? And this is addressing Creep too. He now going under the guise of Aaron. He basically says to the audience, I'm a serial killer. The audience is actually a lady who has a YouTube show, and she goes over to document him and what have you. By him talking to her, she's a proxy for the audience. He tells her right off the bat. He goes, I'm a serial killer. I'm one of the most prolific serial killers in America. Something like 42 victims. But so if you're a serial killer, and you're this diabolical, and you're continually taking on new personas, new identities, and you get more of a sense of that in Creep 2, you are always going to be one step ahead of your victim. And I don't even know if he was drugged. I think he might have feigned unconsciousness because he's one step of it. Aaron is a naif. He's stupid. Hmm. Yeah, maybe he might have managed to drug Joseph, but for all we know, Joseph might have been one step ahead of him knowing that he was being drugged, and he just feigned it. So, because he's playing this elaborate cat and mouse game with his victim, and in a sense, he's almost saying, how much weird shit can I do to freak this guy out, to make him feel uncomfortable before he reaches a breaking point? And for some reason, I don't know why, maybe he needs the money really badly. There's actually one scene where he even offers to give him money. Aaron just sticks around, and every time he feels like he's had too much, Joseph, who's quite cunning in his MO and his disguise and his guise and what have you, keeps pulling him back in. I know. I knew you were going to go there, but I didn't want to do it.
Well, the gasp moment of this film, well, as you mentioned, involves a Peach Fuzz, but also the... Again, is this real? Is this not? Is this some sort of... Is this playing with Aaron's psyche? This dining room table disclosure about his ex-wife and her predilection for a certain type of deviancy and pornography that came out of nowhere. And this was sort of a, I don't want to say just standard kind of movie of this type, like Stalk and Stalk Your Prey type movie. When that came out, I thought, whoa, this is going to go places unforeseen. Mm-hmm. And then they build on that with this mask and this...
And the dance. Whoa,
the dance was something to behold. Mm-hmm. So, and what was, I think, genius here was the revelation about the wife, the missus, was done in complete darkness, because he says, turn the camera off. And then Aaron keeps the record on, but then, you know,
he keeps the audio on, not the
video. And then you get this black, I think it was subtitled, revelation about this perverted, peccadilloes of his wife.
It was bestiality.
Yeah, it was gross and weird.
Around, yeah.
That was crazy. That was really nuts and really shocking.
But once again, it's a cat and mouse game. Joseph put that ad in to get a victim. And once he got that victim to come to his... Which we don't even think... I don't even think is his house.
Because
at one point...
Right.
It's like a rental, right?
Yeah.
At one point, once Aaron starts to realize, okay, things are maybe a little bit unsafe. This really should have been realized maybe like 3 or 4 or 5 red flags ago. Tubby time. Fucking...
J plus A written on the rock.
Oh, my God. But... It's almost like he's toying with him and he's experimenting with him. How much can this guy endure? How much discomfort? How much is it my sympathetic story that I'm dying with cancer? How much credit is that going to buy me?
Quite a lot, I would say.
Well, Aaron, if it was me, I'd be out of there in a heartbeat.
Possibly, but if it was just some, let's say, ad campaign or something without as much emotional weight behind it, maybe he would have just bailed. But there's something, it's the big C. He's got to hang in there. I mean, hell, some of my neighbors, just by virtue of their age, I will hang in there in conversations much longer than I would ordinarily.
Yeah, you're telling me if one of your neighbors started playing Tubby Time in front of you, you would stick around?
Oh, God, I hope not. But he certainly, I mean, he's game. He seems like just a genial, just naive fellow. He's just along for the ride.
You're talking about Aaron.
Aaron, yeah.
Okay.
But I think where the film, I don't want to say falls apart, because that's way too
it doesn't
strong.
Fall apart.
It does not fall apart, but I guess there's cracks and fissures in the foundation where maybe when it gets to the point where he's goading him through the mail with these different DVDs, that was a little less than engaging compared to the body chills at the beginning. Mm-hmm. He gets these DVDs of, at one point, Joseph is digging a shallow grave in a hillside and saying, but it's not even entirely obvious that this is you. It's not like he's saying, I'm going to kill you and put you here. He's just sort of digging. It's implied. It's
knowing
pretty
what
explicit.
Knowing what we know from Creep 2, that was probably one of his prior victims.
Oh, wow. Mm.
So
that stuff, although there's still like a little bit of suspense in there when he leaves stuff at the window, and then you get the sense that Aaron can never escape this guy, even though he's not
well,
in
that's
this
the whole thing.
Pseudo is that rental abode.
And that's what I was saying, is that even, he had many, many opportunities to escape. There were so many red flags that he should have alerted him and he could have walked away, but he didn't. And he stuck around. And this all fits into the diabolical plan that was concocted by Joseph, a.k.a. Aaron in the next film, a.k.a. God knows what his name is. Because every time he kills, he adopts a new identity. Now, of course, this is highlighted more in the sequel, but whatever. Joseph is a diabolical mastermind. And I love it. I love the fact that he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. He knows how much discomfort he's putting this poor guy in. He knows how batshit crazy he's acting. And yet at the same time, and he keeps pushing him away and then pulling him back in. And he does it on purpose.
With the tide, yeah.
Yeah, he puts on the mask as a ridiculous dance. He gets lost in the woods. He keeps jumping up and yelling boo and doing all these things. Telling the stories about the bestiality. Saying, oh, this is my favorite restaurant. Going to the restaurant for pancakes. Oh, what's good here? It's like he's never been there before.
Weird.
And yet Aaron just keeps going along for the ride. So Joseph is playing with him like a fucking fiddle, and it's great.
I was just gonna say, like, this was a Blumhouse co-production.
Yeah.
And
but I think really this was a Bryce Duplass production. Yeah, before they
probably piggybacked on.
And they pick it up for distribution.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say they're like the good but not great, I guess, production company. They're always...
They're getting better.
They get good.
I mean, they just earned their first Best Picture Oscar nomination with Get Out. So, yeah. I mean, that's something, right? Again,
that is something. But you've made no bones. I guess we've used that phrase three times tonight. But
I'm not a fan of
Blumhouse. Not a fan of Get Out. I'm,
no, no, I like Get Out.
Oh, okay. Well, It's not great. Sinister Paranormal Activity.
No, I wouldn't put it in those categories. I like the movie. I just think it was overhyped and overpraised. However, I've made no bones about my disdain for Blumhouse as a studio. I do not like the Purge movies. I do not like the Insidious movies. I like The Gift.
Oh, okay.
Every so often they have a few diamonds in a lot of rough, but. I'm talking about their Paranormal Activities. Was that Blumhouse? I think it is.
Yeah.
Their Insidiouses, their franchise movies.
The
Conjurings. All that shit I can't stand. I mean, The Purge, even the first one didn't do it for me.
Me neither.
And it's just a case of diminishing returns, you know? Their model is interesting. You know, I mean, I can't fault them for wanting to turn out a bunch of films that for as little money as possible, because that's what Roger Corman did, and he's one of my absolute heroes. I just think that their output is... in a way, insulting to horror fans, because it's like we're just going to turn out product, throw as much up against the wall and see what sticks. Some of it does stick. Get Out stuck, and it's got a Best Picture nomination. That's pretty amazing. A horror film nominated for Best Picture.
Really rare. Exorcist or Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs. I don't know if Exorcist was nominated. I know that it got a lot of acting award nominations. Was it nominated for Best Picture? I don't know. It's a little maybe just before my time, but. Silence of the Lambs won for Best Picture, the only horror movie ever to do so, although nowadays all the pundits will argue, it's not horror, and Get Out's not horror, and The Shape of Water is not horror. You know, what is horror? Who cares?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's so funny how we have all these internecine battles within this community. it's not horror. I mean, you know, it's like horror is such a big umbrella that can encompass so many different things. It doesn't have to be an all-out Italian gore fest to be considered horror, you know? Get Out is a horror film. And if it's not a horror film, it's at least horrific, right? But we're going on a tangent here. So I'm going to go back to what we're saying. By and large, I don't like Blumhouse. I don't like found footage. I didn't like Mark Duplass. I like him this one. So this film had a lot of debits going against it, and yet when I watched it, I was pleasantly surprised, and without spoiling anything, that final scene stuck with me. To the point that when I rewatched this movie in preparation for the podcast, and I knew what was going to happen, it still affected me. And it's done so well. Like, it's just minimal. There's we don't have the tropes. We don't have the music. We don't have the crescendo. We don't have the bump, you know?
We have the exact opposite. It's just done in pure silence. Mm-hmm. And also, it's not even the focal point of the shot.
No.
It's in the, like, bottom quarter of the frame at a distance. And you're just watching this... Like this voyeuristic, dispatching.
You know, and it was really interesting that you mentioned that, because at its best, the few found footage movies that actually work enable the audience to feel like a voyeur, like we're watching something that we should not be seeing. You know, and this is going back to, like, again, your cannibal holocaust or whatnot,
or even the scene where Henry portrays a serial killer. They bust into that poor couple's house and there's something.
But the problem was that. Everything, once Blair Witch became such a phenomenon and such a moneymaker, every goddamn uncreative, independent horror filmmaker would make a stupid found footage zombie. Even George Romero himself made a found footage zombie movie, which I actually didn't mind. But anyway, how many times did we get sent indie horror movies that were found footage to review? How many times? And what would I say? Oh, fuck, not another found footage. And it seems to me that finally... This trend is dying, finally, because it seemed like it would never abate.
Yeah, again, if it's used sparingly, like Head Cases was a movie I reviewed on the site where it's just more testimonials from people who knew the victims and maybe the perpetrators.
Well, is that found footage or is that faux documentary?
Yeah, I guess it blurs the lines, but it's not. I mean, when you think found footage of just... yeah, just someone who just can't seem to put down the camera, who's so solipsistic that even when their life is in danger, they just can't seem to just, they're just so committed to their art.
Well,
that kind of stuff. The shaky cam is the, yeah.
It's interesting, though, because, I mean, in the society we live in today, you know, this celebrity-obsessed YouTube culture where...
Oh, Instagram,
and,
yeah, Instagram
and think about, stories. And think about somebody like Logan Paul. I didn't even know who he was until this whole controversy.
Oh, God, I wish I didn't know who he was.
In the forest.
Yeah, this bastard. I watched that film, The Forest, as well. And, like, he went in there and, like, I'm glad that that guy was excoriated publicly, because at least some things are still sacred. I mean, my God, this guy is that was shameful. For those who don't know, he went into the suicide forest outside of Tokyo. Is it outside of Tokyo? Or
I'm not an expert. I didn't see the movie, The Forest.
It's a thing. People go there to commit suicide, and he...
It's kind of like one of our highways used to be here in Toronto.
Oh, my.
No, it's not a highway, but a bridge.
Oh, yeah.
The Gardner. Was it the Gardner?
It's the Bloor Viaduct. Used to throw themselves off this bridge, and then they put suicide barriers that was erected by the city, and those look like crosses. So it's kind of a weird, all roads lead to Rome kind of... Like,
and now they have signs as you're driving towards it. Are you thinking of ending your life?
And call phones too, as if, like, you know, no one has a cell phone, or like if you're gonna kill yourself, like what are you gonna see? Like a yellow phone? It's like, oh, I can call the hotline.
Well, then, the problem is I wouldn't pick up that phone, because even if I want to end my life, I'd be afraid that somebody had smeared feces on it. This is for our listeners that listen to all our episodes.
My God, the Death by Phone Bells podcast.
Yeah. But anyway, you were saying about because we mentioned Logan Paul. So, yeah, there was the whole incident where he went to the suicide forest and...
Yeah, and chronicled some of the stuff and disrespected the memories of these poor people and that
kind
of
thing.
Well,
he showed an actual dead body.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the video.
Nor would I. And that, yeah, disgraceful conduct. And good for him that he was partly suspended and you know, demonetized partly. And he can come back maybe when he's done his penance.
But so,
there's nothing sacred.
When you talk about people being so solipsistic that they can't put the camera down, even when their life is in danger, what we have now is people that are maybe not putting the camera down, but recording them doing things that are absolutely asinine. What about the Tide Pod challenge? Again, people will do anything to put up on YouTube so that they can amass some sort of following, some sort of hollow form of fame to, I don't know, get subscribers, advertising revenue, what have you, you know? And again, I did not watch one video of somebody eating a Tide Pod. I don't want to watch it. These are just morons that don't deserve to have any sort of my attention. But in many ways, this is almost like the evolution of found footage. Instead of carrying a camera while somebody is chasing you for your very life, recording yourself doing things that are...
Hey, maybe I've given them short shrift, and maybe they're ahead of their time now, given what you're saying.
Well, this is what society's evolved to. So found footage as a genre has abated, but we have something else going on, and that's what's happening in real life and what morons are putting on YouTube.
Yes, but still, if I'm going to segue into what I've learned, I was just going to say, in a film about found footage, which is a visual medium, that it's kind of interesting and telling that the most jarring aspect of this whole film is audio and just storytelling, and really, like...
It is a dialogue-driven film.
Yeah, and to have something that's so jarring, like I can't think of another thing, like maybe the aforementioned Silence of the Lambs and the fava beans and the liver, like something that you've heard someone say that's been so like a punch to the gut, going like that's fucked up.
Here's Johnny.
Possibly, but at least there, like, the axe came through the door and everything, but this was like pure just spoken thrill, and that's a credit to Duplass and Bryce, like like an oral in AU RAL.
It is dialogue
driven.
That's
amazing.
But there are visual frights as well.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, and I'm mostly talking about Peach Fuzz the werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
How do you even describe that mask? What the fuck, man?
That was, I don't know, like, that was more like a lion's mane than a wolf's, like, get up. And he puts that on, he dons it, it's stuffed in the closet, and he says it's part of some family tradition where his father used to put it on. It was a weird backstory that made no sense. He does this dance, and that was another thing that was just so messed up and so, like, it's something I'd never seen before. It was one of the great, you know, maybe mask scares. Mm. Like, that was really terrific.
Okay, so if we're talking about what we learned, well... First of all, What our listeners have learned is that I, Jeff, think that Netflix absolutely sucks and does not deserve my $10.99 a month. Fuck you, Netflix, for raising your price by $1 a month and just taking away everything I want
to
watch.
Yeah, I've said before, I would, if they raised the price point to $25, I would happily pay it if they provided me with some good content.
Mind you, they do have...
Instead of just slipping... like Army of Darkness past the goalie, mm-hmm. instead of a bunch of just like direct to video, just garbage.
Wake up. So, mind you, there are some good rock documentaries that come on every now and again. Yeah. Some of them I watch, I don't even know why. Like, I watched a 3.5 hour documentary on the Eagles, and I loathe the Eagles. I watched a 2.5 hour documentary on Chicago,
which made me
fear for humanity.
Oh, God.
I do like Joe Walsh, yes. Yeah.
He was like kidnapped into the Eagles.
Yeah, well, he's still, I think he's like the only original member who's still touring with them. Well, him and Henley. Mm. But anyway, we digress. I'm not going to talk about the Eagles. What I learned is that, like I said before, I used to rent these stupid hipster indie movies, you know, these Sundance favorites, so to speak, right?
Oh, the mumblecore horror?
Yeah, well, no, not even horror. Just like I said, like this movie called The Puffy Chair that was written and directed by Mark Duplass and his brother Jay. And I used to rent these movies because maybe it was, I don't know, I used to listen to more hipster music, whatever. It was just like, I guess you could say I was almost a hipster. I don't know. Mm. Or maybe I just wanted to be a hipster. Now I loathe hipsters. See, you're learning a lot about what I loathe in today's podcast. I loathe a lot of things. I actually loathe you, but that's just kidding. I'm kidding.
You're the reason for my life. You're my inspiration.
That's Chicago.
Right.
Yeah. Pierce Cetera.
Yeah.
Well. I did it all for the glory. My off-key singing. Yeah, wow. How our listeners have stuck by us with
TLC,
all my...
degenerated or we like elevated to Chicago. Who knows?
But anyway, I guess when I watched this movie, The Puffy Chair, I was starting to see through these little precious indie movie Sundance films, and I really just missed Mark Duplass as just one of those sort of hipster actors. Yeah. So when I first saw Creep and... I was like, holy shit, that's the guy from The Puffy Chair. I didn't even recognize him. And then I see this other side of him, this sinister side, this evil side, this really uncomfortable side. And I really developed a large amount of respect for him as an actor. So I went from being a Duplass dismisser, per se, to being a fan. I respect the guy.
Yeah,
and
too.
Although I don't think Creep 2 is as successful as Creep 1... I do think it's worth a watch, especially if you did enjoy the first Creep. It's like I said before, the novelty might have worn off and it's not as successful. The heroine in the movie is not as likable, not so much likable. I can actually call Aaron likable, but there's just something about his naivete.
Call him a heroine?
No, there's a heroine. There's something, maybe it's just his naivete. There's just something about Aaron that you're just kind of like, oh man, and you kind of root for him. Whereas in Creep 2, you're not really rooting for her much at all because she is so self-absorbed. She's a YouTuber.
Yeah.
And that just ties right into what we're saying.
I realized I learned another thing.
Mm-hmm.
The major debit in this film, I would say...
You're a hard habit to break, Chris.
I am, indeed.
Another Pierce of Terror Chicago song, right?
Good God.
Didn't we sing Saturday in the Park like two episodes ago? What the fuck is going on?
That's a pretty great song. I thought...
Chris, do you know what time it is right now? Does
is
anybody this, really know
oh,
what
okay,
time it
Jesus,
is?
We're going to just name Chicago songs? Like
25 by 64.
I had enough of a problem with the Toronto Transit Authority. Forget about Chicago getting over here. But I was going to say the debit. Like, he makes a phone call to police, and they're dismissive of him and his complaints about this guy who's sending him this letter, and he says he's stalking me. And they brush it off like it's nothing. And I'm sorry, that's a debit to this film because he has... video evidence of the guy threatening him. If you bring in a DVD of a guy digging a grave and saying, "Hey, Jeff," and then I'm just there on the hillside, like, this could be you, and I'm digging away. I'm sorry, like, you should treat this with a hell of a lot more seriousness than he did. And just to be sort of, he was, you know, put in a call and he was just a victim of bureaucracy, and then they hung up on him or vice versa, and he didn't pursue the matter. Hell, I had a very minor police incident where someone took out a cell phone in my name. So it was identity theft.
Mm.
They billed me to the tune of $900. The fucking, I don't know what this says about the TPD or the Toronto Police. They came to my door to get a police statement from me about this stupid $1,000 phone calamity. And for them not to take a video threat seriously, I thought that was a little ridiculous. So that's a major debit, but it's not going to detract from my star rating. Because I'm going to give this 4 stars. I thought this was incredible. This, and maybe I'm adjusting my rating scale because I tend to knock a half a point off for found footage, but this was like dynamite, fantastic, wonderful performances, and interesting that I guess they sketched out a little of the plot, but then they just basically improvised, and you could tell it was very naturalistic, and kudos, Messrs. Bryson Duplass. Yes. This is fantastic.
And I'm going to agree with you. Amazing. Even though there are, you know, we can pick apart certain flaws within the internal logic of the movie and the story and so on, I am going to give it a 4 stars because there are so many reasons why I should not like this movie, i.e. Blumhouse, i.e. found footage, etc. But I really liked it. And what is really indicative of the fact that this deserves 4 stars is that it was even just as effective on my second viewing. For you, you had the element of surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
I did not, and I still found it effective, and I still found it chilling, and I still found it scary. 4 stars for me as well. I really like it. So yeah.
Yeah, and I guess maybe they're harder to find, but the horror scene is alive and well. You just got to, you know, dig around to find these diamonds in the rough, as you said earlier. And for more, check out www.reallyawfulmovies.com. And thank you for joining us, and tune in every Friday.
You always say, you know, please send us some recommendations.
Yeah,
so
I
on.
Do, yeah.
What I'm going to say is, hey, send us your favorite Chicago songs, and maybe we'll warble it on our next episode.
There will be no warbling.
I loathe the Chicago. Actually, I think any band that's named after a city. Well, Boston is good. Boston is good.
I don't know.
You don't like Amanda?
Not
more than a feeling.
Not a fan.
Come on.
Overproduced.
Okay. And this
These guys are like unbelievably lacking in is this even a word? Prolificness. I mean, they're like they release one album every decade, and they're not even good albums. So like, at least if you're going to come up with something brilliant, fan base is like dying off
considering that their lead singer killed himself a couple of years ago and blames their de facto band leader for that. You know, I mean,
they got a great horn section. I got to say that much.
Chicago?
Yeah, sure.
Or Boston?
No,
there's no horns
Chicago,
in Boston.
Chicago, yeah.
But they're both great cities.
They are. I've been to both. They're fantastic. I've been to Chicago 3 times. But, bands named after places. Asia, they're shit as well. Europe, they're shit. If you're going to name yourself after a geographical locale, do so with a caveat.
If you're gonna name yourself after a dog in a Wizard of Oz movie and put out a song named after a continent called Africa, it's a kick-ass song. And anybody that doesn't like that song, I have no use for.
Exactly.
Anyway, on that note, we should probably wrap things up.
Yeah, and follow us on Twitter too. What the hell? And do us a favor and write us a favorable review on iTunes.
Or write us an unfavorable one.
We don't care.
Just write something.
Yeah, awful_movies, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Here's episode 207. That's wonderful. Good job.
Dude, that was fun.
Stop.
You don't mind.